Guess what? It is time for another Walk and Talk podcast. And in this podcast, we do have a plan. And the plan for this Walk and Talk is I want to talk about the rule of law. Hearing this a lot these days that, well, you know, nobody follows the rule of law in this country anymore. And this is one of the most often heard rhetorical phrases in today's rhetorical political world. And we're going to talk about it in this podcast. But before I get started, I got to mention this because it's really a bug in my bonnet. And that is that for some reason, the Star Tribune drops this Sunday ad section with their cheesy articles about, you know, light rail and how to, you know, how to plant flowers and, you know, the parade of homes stuff. And they drop it every Sunday morning right in my driveway. And I'm the only guy in the block that gets it. And I don't understand why. So while I am heaving this into the recycling, like a good citizen in Hennepin County, I'll tell you about my payment processor. So my payment processor is ReliaFund. Why do I have ReliaFund as my payment processor? And if you want to find out more, you can just go to ReliaFund.com or click on the banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcast.com. I have ReliaFund as a payment processor because what I wanted to do was to be able to process checks, because a lot of my clients pay with checks and they don't like to pay with PayPal or some other credit card. They want to just give me a check. And so with ReliaFund, it's easy for me to process payments through ReliaFund that are in check form. So the client can just simply go on to my page, click on the ReliaFund widget, and enter the checking information, and I get paid right away. And of course, payment processing is all about getting paid faster, because cash flow is better and we all like getting paid faster. Plus, if you have a great payment processor, you know, when you're talking to a client and they say, let's do it, well, you can whip it out and just go, okay, you know, enter the information and you're good to go. And if you want to do credit cards, we can do this. If you want to do checks, we can do that. So listen up, because this is a message for people that are developing their back office business stuff or developing websites that do e-commerce. ReliaFund is a great payment processor who works with your developers to integrate their systems into your systems, regardless of what your systems are. For example, ReliaFund works with QuickBooks, so you can send out an invoice with a Pay Now button, and it goes directly to ReliaFund. So if you want to know more, call ReliaFund. You'll talk to a human being. They have no long-term contracts. They're secure, technology-focused. The number is 866-243-5040. That's 866-243-5040. 5040. If you call them, you're going to talk to Kevin Hill or Greg Lowry. Again, it's the technology focus and the experience in 20 years of payment processing that makes ReliaFund great. Check them out online at ReliaFund.com, R-E-L-I-A-F-U-N-D, ReliaFund.com, or click on the banner at the top of the page, thebobdavispodcast.com. That takes you directly to their brand new contact page, and you can tell them about your situation. And of course, I'll be telling you more about ReliaFund in the future at thebobdavispodcasts.com. Okay, so this, of course, is podcast 831, and if you want to get this podcast, or if somebody you know wants to know how to get the Bob Davis podcast, they can go directly to the page at thebobdavispodcast.com and click on the subscribe button, and you'll subscribe to the feed. You can go to iTunes and subscribe. You can also hear the podcast at blogtalkradio.com, Spreaker.com. We are on Spotify, which is great for Android devices, Stitcher.com, Google Play Music, and many, many others. It works. Tuned In is one of my big ones, and that works with Alexa. So you can get the podcast all over the place. And of course, we have streaming on the page at thebobdavispodcast.com, plays the last three podcasts, or you can listen to each podcast right off the page at the Bob Davis Podcast. You just click on the headline for the podcast, and then you go down to the player and hit play. Wait a couple minutes for these gigantic, awesome, high quality audio files to load. It's not even a couple of minutes, but you know what I mean. And you're off and running. Thank you for sharing the Bob Davis Podcast posts on Facebook, retweeting on Twitter, and for your donations for mobile podcast command at thebobdavispodcasts.com. The genesis for this podcast is a little conversation I had with a friend just briefly, probably at the beginning of last week, when all this news about the failure of Attorney General Barr to show up to testify in front of Congress started, and the flurry of tweets and the fury of the president and of various members of the House. So we're doing the yoga challenge again at yoga, and it's you do 10, 20, or 30 classes in a month. And of course, I always do the 30. And if you want to do the 30, you got to do it. You got to have it. Either you got to go every day for 30 days, or you got to do some double dips. And so I've been double and triple dipping to get ahead as far as I can so that I can kind of relax toward the end of the month, because the hard part with the 30-day challenge is to get through the month without getting really tired. And it's always difficult every now and then. At least one day of the week, you're going to have problems getting to yoga. So you got to double dip when you can. So we were talking after, I think it was the day that I did the triple dip, as a matter of fact. And the prize, if you win, so you're picked out of a drawing nationally, and with the 30-day, you get three chances to win. So if you complete the 30-day challenge, which is 30 classes in 30 days, well, then you get three chances to win. And I was saying, hey, you know, a friend of mine was saying, well, you know, oh, I see you're going nuts again with this 30-day challenge. And I said, yeah. And he said, why? And I said, because I want to win that trip to Costa Rica. That's why. And he said, oh, yeah, that'd be great to go to Costa Rica, a country that follows the rule of law. And I had to laugh. And that is what ticked me off. That is what set me off down this path of consideration that I have actually been thinking about the last few weeks. Or days, rather. Pretty much the last week, I've been thinking about this whole quote-unquote rule of law question. So, a bit of a recap. As you know, Bob Mueller, as a special investigator, was appointed by the president and served under the assistant attorney general because the attorney general at the time recused himself, meaning he felt that he had a conflict of interest and so he wouldn't supervise the investigation. So it fell to assistant attorney general Rod Rosenstein, I believe, to supervise Mr. Mueller, or at least be the officer, the official government officer under which Mueller's investigation would progress. And it took almost 2 years for the investigation to progress. And the objective was to find out if there was, and the newspapers and the media and everyone else continues to use this word collusion, if there was collusion between the Russians and then candidate for president Donald Trump, and then after he was the president-elect, and then finally President Donald Trump, if there was collusion between the Trump campaign et al. And President Trump, to conspire, and I'm going to use the term conspire, but to collude with the Russians to quote-unquote steal the election from Hillary Clinton. And the assumption is that because Hillary Clinton won the popular vote, that it is impossible for anyone else to have won the presidency based on the Electoral College, and that some funny thing had to happen and there had to be quote-unquote collusion. Well, collusion itself is not a crime. And what they really said, and actually the language used in the Mueller report, was a conspiracy to commit election fraud would be the proper term for what was being described. Now, I supported the investigation because I felt we needed to know. I feel that it's a national security issue to know the extent of which a foreign government may or may not have tampered with our election. Now, when I say tamper, what I'm talking about are hacking into election voting systems and, literally putting your finger on the scale. What the Russians apparently did, based on the CIA reports as well as the stuff in the Mueller report, what the Russians apparently did was spend somewhere around $100,000, maybe even less, to generate news on Facebook and other platforms that were then reshared out, which basically was quote-unquote false news or fake news. And the best way to describe that, and by the way, my conspiracy theory friends will throw their heads back and be inconsiderate of this statement, but the idea, for example, Pizzagate, that there was this massive child abuse ring being run out of Washington and then they were all part of it and so forth, which, you know, has never been proven. People like Alex Jones, as I mentioned this a couple times, have picked this stuff up and ballyhooed it, and there was any number of them. She was a body double had been used to replace her. She was a reptilian alien. That was a big one. And any number of other things that were quote-unquote false. So she was suffering from some brain disease and had to be held up, which it certainly appeared. I watched that video, and it sure convinced me, and I still think there's something wrong with her, but that's neither here nor there. Because I don't know if there is or there isn't. I will tell you an interesting little story. And I think it was her. But I was driving down in Iowa covering the 2016 election primaries down there. And it was right in between that time when the Republicans were coming to the end of their primary and then the Democrat primary was a week later. So Republicans and Democrats were crisscrossing the state, as they do in Iowa, to find any little hamlet or diner that is unspoiled that they can possibly soil through with their political dirt and their slime all over the state of Iowa. So I was out on some highway, and it was late. It was like midnight, and I don't know where I was going. I was either going from Jefferson, Iowa, back up to Des Moines, or from Des Moines back down to Jefferson. I may have even actually been coming back, or heading south to South Carolina after that Republican primary. And I look up in my rearview mirror, and I see this convoy coming toward Mobile Podcast Command. And I was going probably 60, 65. And this was on a two-lane, split highway. So this was a state road it was probably a state road. I don't know which road it was. But it was flat, but it was pouring down rain and storming. It was raining, as I recall, you know. And it was right there at the beginning of March or later. And you know how that is in the Midwest. So I was probably going about 55, 60 and in Mobile Podcast Command and just not trying to push it. And this convoy came up on me pretty dang fast. And the reason I remember it is because two suburban SUVs went flying by. And behind the two black SUVs flying by, there may even have been three, was, and this is the reason I remember it, because I drive Mobile Podcast Command is an old ambulance. And so when another ambulance went by me at, like, they were going 80, and the ambulance itself was going about 80. And let me tell you, it had to be brand new, because my ambulance, if it goes 80, it's flat out. So what's really interesting is I thought, wow, you know, and the lights were on inside the ambulance, and I could see that there was the gurney was in there, and the thing was propped up against the back window. So, and it was a real ambulance. But I thought, that's got to be Hillary Clinton traveling in three SUVs and an ambulance. So why is there an ambulance chasing the Hillary Clinton campaign? You know, I know it wasn't Ted Cruz or anyone like that, because Ted Cruz had a bus. There were two buses, and I'm pretty sure Rubio had a bus, too. So it was just really odd to me that someone would be traveling with three black SUVs and an ambulance. So to me, that was my little proof that there's obviously something wrong with Hillary Clinton. Do I know it was Hillary Clinton? No, I don't. I have no idea if it was Hillary Clinton, but I thought that was really interesting that I saw that. So it was that kind of misinformation, that a little snippet taken from over here. And of course, the source for all this information was the hacked DNC files, which just real quickly were hacked because of a phishing scam. And my understanding is that John Podesta, who was the chair of the DNC at the time and the head of the Hillary Clinton campaign, clicked on this phishing scam, and it sucked everything out of his computer. And it's turned out, according to U.S. intelligence, that Guccifer, who is supposedly and reportedly some kind of Russian hacker, was the guy that sucked all the data out of this, of some 10,000 or so emails out of the DNC servers. And then they gave that to Julian Assange at WikiLeaks, and then WikiLeaks published it, and there was the whole Glenn Reynolds thing, and blah, 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 blah. And these emails then started to become the basis for a lot of misinformation. And that is how they, quote unquote, tampered with the American election, according to people who have interpreted. Although, and this is really important, so the Mueller report has come out, and the Mueller report found no prosecutable information, nothing to, no reason to prosecute. There's no, I guess I could say, prosecutable basis based on what they discovered. However, they did come to a conclusion that Congress may want to do something with this obstruction of justice issue. So it's very important that people understand. Now I'm walking around in this grass, and of course, it's wet. Thank God I'm not in my bare feet, because my feet would be freezing right now. So it's very important that people understand that the report doesn't implicate the Trump campaign at this point in any attempt to, quote unquote, tamper with the United States election or to commit conspiracy to commit election fraud with a foreign power. OK, which really would be, I guess it would be treason. OK, which is a very high offense, as you know. The rest of it is innuendo, I guess you could say, or even direct statements from Mueller that suggest that what's needed is that Congress should pick up this obstruction of justice issue. And the standard line in political circles now is rule of law, rule of law, rule of law. We need people in this country that are going to follow the rule of law. And the rule of law is supreme, and we don't follow the rule of law anymore in the United States. And I see this all over the place, and I see it in particular in Democratic circles these days. And it's this charge that somehow this is a lawless administration and they're running amok and they're paying no attention to the law and how dare they and so forth and so on. Finally reaching a crescendo when the Attorney General was asked to testify in front of Congress, was treated rather shabbily, and then they wanted him to come back and he refused to testify. And so I want to talk about the mechanisms for all of this, because I'm not sure if they actually did end up voting to find Barr in contempt of Congress. I think they did. And so I want to talk about that in this podcast. And I'll talk about the second part of this, because I want to talk about the mechanisms, because no one is explaining this stuff to people, and I want to talk about this. And it's, when I say anything positive about the Trump administration or anything negative about the Trump administration or Congress, it isn't partisan. It is just so people understand what we're talking about. I'm not here to criticize either one of them. You guys know how I feel about it. I don't think, you know, we've got an enormous public debt. We have an enormous debt problem in the economy that is really very little is being talked about regarding it. I think we've got a lot of issues that at some point are going to have to be addressed. And the longer we put them off, the bigger the problem is going to be. Those things are not getting addressed. Whose fault is it? Well, you can blame Congress. I mean, everyone hates Congress. You can blame Congress. But you could also blame the voters. And that's really a different podcast. So in the second half of this podcast, I'm going to talk about this quote-unquote rule of law rhetorical problem and outline some things, because I did a little research this weekend on this, and we'll do that in the second half of this podcast. Well, as you know, Ryan Plumbing and Heating of St. Paul has been a sponsor of the Bob Davis podcast for a long time, and I've been talking about AC checks. Going to be in the 70s this week. This is a perfect time to have Ryan come over and check your AC. The thing is, we've had a long winter. It's been a tough winter. We've had a lot of wind. Stuff has been flying off trees, and if you have one of those boxes in your backyard, you should have somebody coming over and check it, because that can cause all kinds of problems. People have found, you know, bird's nests in there, sticks, and all kinds of things. So it's worth it to have Ryan come over and check your AC. before the heat starts. And of course, they're going to be deluged with calls once it does get hot. So this is the time to do it. But Ryan wants me to mention that if you are looking at updating your bathroom or your kitchen or your heating system, you know, they've been working their ass off all winter, and this is the time that they fail. So if you're thinking about redoing the furnace or the water heater, call Ryan about really efficient toilets, which, you know, you may not think that's a big deal, but let me tell you, the reality is that water's getting very, very, very expensive. So an efficient flush toilet replacing one of your 60-year-old toilets that's really inefficient is actually a really good deal. And they can also give you heating systems that also heat hot water instantly, and all of this stuff you can get grants for and rebates for. So talk to Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul to find out more. 651-224-4771 in Minneapolis, 612-927-6488, online at ryanplumbing.com. Now, I'm walking, I'm talking, and I don't have any anything written out. I don't have the things that I found written out, but I can do it from memory. But I just want to caution, and also, you know, a little bit of a disclaimer that it's possible some of the things that I say are going to be a little inaccurate, because I don't always recall things, you know, exactly as they are. So yeah, rule of law. Let's talk about what this whole thing about rule of law. Where am I getting this rule of law thing? Well, everyone's talking about, you know, this guy is not following the rule of law. The president is a lawless president. He's not following the rule of law, and something's got to be done. And Nancy Pelosi said, you know, remember, she has a whole bunch of people in her party who are demanding that President Trump be impeached. Congress can impeach anyone they want for just about any reason they want. And the question is whether or not the votes would exist in the Senate to, you know, not remove the president from office. So he would win the case in the Senate. And, you know, the Senate acts as the jury. And that, of course, is what happened with William Clinton, the president that was impeached most recently. And it's what Nixon resigned to avoid, because he did not have the votes in the Senate and they would have removed him. And rather than suffer the defeat and the disgrace of being the only president removed from office in history, Nixon resigned. And I'm going to talk about Nixon in a second. But so that's the Democrat perspective, is that he has to go and he must be impeached, except politically they're a little concerned about impeaching President Trump, because it's the reverse of Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton was impeached for obstruction of justice, basically. He wasn't impeached for getting a blowjob in the Oval Office. He was impeached for lying about it. And in fact, he was disbarred from lying about it. But here's the thing about Clinton. What's interesting about Bill Clinton is that he was impeached and everybody was convinced he was going to be removed from office, because that was what everyone said, that the, you know, the Republican House at the time was big majority. They were going to impeach Trump. They had the trial, and the Senate was supposed to decide if they were going to take Clinton out. And the Senate voted very narrowly, as I recall, to not remove President Clinton from office. And so Clinton went on to win a second term and solidified his political support by virtue of the fact that he was on television for an entire 6 to 9 month period while he was being impeached, far more than Henry Hyde, who was the House Majority Leader, or the Speaker at the time, who was Newt Gingrich, or anybody else. So the fact that he was on television during this entire period of time, I think, contributed in no small amount to his second term. And so Pelosi, who was around at that time, and others who are quote-unquote cooler heads in the Democratic Party, are saying, you know, if we impeach him, he's going to win a second term. Do we really want to do that? So now what they're trying to do is death by a thousand cuts, and as Pelosi has described it, self-impeachment, where they make it untenable for him to be president, and so then he resigns. Now, I don't know what's going to happen, but I would say this. You know, Donald Trump loves nothing more than a good fight and to dig his heels in a good fight. So I wouldn't underestimate Trump's tenacity in this thing. And that's all I'll say about that. So a lot of the rhetoric coming out of the Democratic Party these days is that Trump is this lawless guy who's not obeying the law. Our government doesn't obey the rule of law anymore, and there's no hope, and the Republic is dead, and on and on and on. It's interesting because those were the same things that the Republicans said not too many years ago about Clinton. It's the same thing that people, Democrats and others, said about Nixon. As to whether or not they were actually committing crimes, I'll talk about Nixon and toward the end here because I don't want to take up too much time with this. So what was I going to say about rule of law? So I did some research, and I think people need to know, okay, because I don't know that anyone has actually explained this. So here's a trivia question for you. So if the Hennepin County Court subpoenas you in a criminal case, you get a subpoena in the mail and it says, you know, Bob Davis, you are hereby required to attend and testify for the prosecution in this case, and the date is this date and the time is this time, and what happens to me if I say I'm not showing up to that? I don't like those people and I don't follow their rules and I disagree with their authority and I refuse to show up. What happens to me? I'm giving you time to respond to that. Well, what happens to me is I will be charged with a felony. If the court chooses, they can charge me with a felony. More than likely, a prosecutor will get on the phone and say, are you going to testify or not? You know, and they would bother me, and then they would tell me, if you don't show up, then you're going to be charged with a felony, right? So that's what happens if you don't show up for a court, a subpoena from a court. You can be put in jail. And I don't know what the sentence is. It's whatever the state law is for contempt of court in your state. That's what the judge can sentence you to, okay? Unless you have a real good reason for not wanting to testify. Like, you know, they're going to kill me if I testify. Something like that. Now, what happens if you're a president or an attorney general? In other words, you work for the president in the executive branch, or you're some guy who is compelled to testify by Congress, and you say, I don't recognize your laws, you can't make me do anything. And Congress says, yes, we can. You can be punished for being, we will find you in contempt of Congress, and you will be punished. What's the penalty? So the penalty for contempt of Congress is a misdemeanor, and it's punishable by up to $100,000 fine, I believe. Could be 10, but I think it's 100, or a year in jail. So guess how many people have actually been jailed for contempt of Congress? I think one, and I don't remember the exact details. I want to say it was back in the 70s, but people have been threatened, and they have also been found to be in contempt of Congress. Especially people in the executive branch, dating back to George Washington, none other than the father of this nation, who refused to provide documents to Congress when they were investigating something, and then none other than Thomas Jefferson, the co-author of the Declaration of Independence, who in the U.S. versus Burr case refused to testify, I think, and he was found in contempt of Congress. And so did Harry Truman. Harry Truman's White House was found in contempt of Congress, and Eisenhower was found in contempt of Congress on the House Un-American Affairs Committee, or whatever it was called, the McCarthy Committee, and he wouldn't provide information and data or files to Congress, and he also was found in contempt of Congress. Of course, various members of the Nixon administration were found in contempt of Congress, and as were Janet Reno, the Attorney General during the Clinton administration, and Eric Holder on, I believe, Fast and Furious, who refused to testify and provide documents on that particular issue, all the way up to Attorney General Barr, who refuses to testify in Congress because he doesn't want to answer certain questions. And why are they able to do this without being thrown in the congressional jail? The answer is executive privilege. And this is very interesting because executive privilege has only been tested a few times. And here's the other thing people need to understand. The courts do not like to get involved in inter-branch, you know, branches of government fights, because the court is also a separate branch of the government. So you have the courts, you have the legislative branch, and you have the executive branch. The court, including the Supreme Court, really doesn't like getting involved to make decisions about which side wins. But they have, and they have upheld or actually contributed to creating the concept legally of executive privilege, which says that the White House, as in the president, needs to have the executive branch, in order to run the government, which is its primary responsibility, needs to be able to make decisions about things that would, in some way or another, negatively affect the proper conduct of running the government, national security or other things. Communications in particular were part of a decision recently by the Supreme Court, which kind of codifies this idea of executive privilege. So is the president, this president, Donald Trump, violating the rule of law? Well, not so far, because he's been able to invoke executive privilege, and that's where the matter is going to end, unless somebody can find a reason to sue and find a court that would take the case and make a decision requiring the president or the attorney general to testify. So what's happening here is that this is a political fight between two branches of government, and it's a political fight between two political parties. Democrats don't like Donald Trump for various reasons, and Donald Trump really doesn't like them for various reasons. So what you have is you have a fight between two branches of government, and they're going to throw out all kinds of rhetoric that doesn't mean anything. Is the president violating the law? Well, can you answer that question? And what law is he specifically violating? We haven't found any evidence that he even obstructed justice. We have found evidence that, have we found any evidence that he, quote unquote, conspired with the Russians to tamper with the U.S. election? The answer is no. You know, Mueller has his opinions. He suggested that Congress look into this issue of obstruction of justice. And let's talk about that a little bit. You know, presidents don't like having their secrets told in front of Congress for various reasons. Sometimes they're good reasons and sometimes they aren't. You know, sometimes presidents just are mad at Congress and they don't want to give any ground. But other times it is an issue with running the government, or they think it's an issue with running the government, and they invoke executive privilege, and they can do that. So, you know, there's nothing illegal about invoking executive privilege unless somebody comes up with some new evidence that says, here's the smoking gun that says that President Trump obstructed justice, or here's the smoking gun that says that President Trump sat down with Putin and said, we're gonna screw Hillary Clinton. Right? Until that evidence emerges, there's no evidence of any federal crimes being committed by this president so far. So what's the difference between Trump and Nixon? And this is just my surface read. So Nixon did obstruct justice, and the evidence is on the tapes. Aside from it demanding that Henry Kissinger break into the Rand Corporation and steal the files that indicated that Nixon had conspired with the South Vietnamese president to end the war, which is treason, and there was documentation for that. Aside from that being on the tapes, there's also the 18-minute gap and plenty of evidence that Nixon made attempt after attempt to obstruct justice. So that's kind of what screwed Nixon, was that stupid White House taping system that he left in place because he thought it was going to show that he was this amazing president in the end. First thing he should have done was pull that thing out of the White House. But that is the smoking gun that in the end got him. There is no White House taping system that I know of that's going to show up to prove that Donald Trump, you know, committed some kind of felony, or that any of the people in his campaign committed a felony. So the upshot here in the final line on this is this. You know, it's a political fight, and the deal is that until they find a smoking gun or evidence that irrefutably states this person has obstructed justice, which may exist, I don't know, and you don't know either, or actually conspired with the Russians to, you know, tamper with the U.S. election results, he is, you know, going to continue as president. He's not going to quit because he's nervous or scared. And they're probably not, they can bring all the people they want to testify, but anything that's really potentially dangerous. And in this case, what started off the Barr thing is this letter that Mueller supposedly wrote that he made public, which he's not supposed to do. And aside from him testifying, I don't think Mueller's going to testify, and I'll tell you why. Maybe he will. But he can't answer certain questions because, you know, an investigation that involves people who haven't committed a crime, you know, those people's names cannot be revealed, and what they said can't necessarily be revealed, because if they did so, they would be, that person would have cause, if he didn't commit a crime, to sue the government for basically false, false accusations. So there's a whole bunch of stuff that's in those reports that had to be redacted because, according to, you know, a number of different sources, you can't put people's names out there in the public that didn't do anything wrong as being part of an investigation. So I don't know if Mueller's going to testify, and I don't know what they're going to get out of him if he does testify, because even if he does testify, he's going to have to say, I can't answer that question. And as far as getting a more, I guess there are a couple of non-redacted versions, but even those congressmen that have those can't necessarily reveal information without having the same potential problem, which is that somebody might say, you revealed my name as part of an investigation and it's, you know, affected my livelihood, so I'm going to sue you. So this whole thing about the rule of law is, I see this, and I think it's a great, I'll just close with this. I think this is a great, I don't want to say teaching moment, but I think this is a great example of the system working. I think this is a great example of the legal system functioning and the Constitution functioning the way it's supposed to, you know. And if you really, if you just simply say, okay, I'm going to read the Sixth Amendment because it applies to this, or I'm going to read the Article 2 that describes the powers of the presidency, which is very limited, you know, they never really, so we get into this whole implied powers thing. The same with Congress, there's a ton written about what Congress is responsible for. They didn't really put much thought into what the president was supposed to do. So, there's that. And I just think this is a great example of how this thing works. But this thing about people running around and claiming that we're off the books now, we're in uncharted territory when it comes to the law, is nonsense. You know, they have found, U.S. Congress, and I mean the House, has found, you know, any number of government officials that from the executive branch and others in contempt of Congress because they refuse to testify or they refuse to turn over documents for whatever reason. Now, one more thing and I'm done. People are confusing the New York State Attorney General's investigation of Trump's business stuff with the investigation by Mueller. And they are saying things like, they can't do that. It's against the Constitution. They can't get his, but that's wrong. Well, yes, they can, because we're talking about the state attorney general of New York. We're not talking about Congress. There you go. That's what I think about the rule. That's what I think of your rule of law. Don't forget Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul, metro-wide. So they go to Invergrove, Plymouth, St. Louis Park, West St. Paul, Minneapolis, Maple Grove, all the way down to Shakopee and places like Deep Haven and all over the place. Ryan Plumbing and Heating, four generations in St. Paul's Frogtown. In Minneapolis, you can call them at 612-927-6488. And good old St. Paul, 651-224-4771. Quality replacement and repair of all plumbing, heating, and air conditioning systems, residential and business. Ryan Plumbing and Heating at ryanplumbing.com, or click on the banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcasts.com. Okay, I'm done. It is time to stay up all night watching TV, and I got another episode of Game of Thrones I got to watch, so I'm going to get into that. Thank you for listening to Podcast 831, The Bob Davis Podcasts. Rule of Law!
Ever feel like you can't breathe? Does the water feel too deep? Lie awake cause you can't sleep without it. Ever feel like you're alone? When you're lost but you're already home. Lie awake cause you